Thank you all for being here tonight. As always, it is an honor and a glory to be here to serve our God. So on Wednesday nights, we've been studying the book of Proverbs, and we've been looking at Proverbs 10. Now, I know it's been about 2 weeks since we last saw this section because of the end of the month devotional, but does anyone remember where we left off the last time we opened this book together? Anyone remember where exactly we left off? Okay. So what have we been comparing Proverbs with? What have we been paralleling it with in the New Testament? James. What was that?
James chapter 3.
Yes, James chapter 3. And if you recall, what we've been doing is there in section of Proverbs chapter 10, verses 6 through 13, we've been seeing that verses 6 through 10, it talks about how our tongue can either construct or destruct oneself, right? And as we paralleled it with James chapter 3, verses 1 through 5, we've been able to see how we see the concept being taught by Proverbs, and in James it gives us an application and shows us the reality of this, right? So we last left off, I heard someone say verse 9. Let's go ahead and read Proverbs chapter 10, verse 9. The Bible reads, "He who walks with integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will become known." Now, we drew the parallel there with James chapter 3, verse 4. And if you will, someone turn there. James chapter 3, verse 4. Someone can read it for us, please.
"Behold also the ships, which though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whatsoever the governor of this world."
So, pay attention to the fact that in Proverbs chapter 10, right, verse 9, the strength, right, that one finds is what? What gives a man to be strong as far as being able to use his words correctly? Integrity, right? What is integrity? What does it mean to have integrity? What does it mean to be a man or a woman of integrity? Someone who's always telling the truth, someone who is always honest, okay?
Righteous.
Someone who is righteous, Adam?
Integrity continues to show a mannerism of way that one lives, particularly in this manner of living God's life.
Okay, so when we talk about the word integral, what does it mean to be integral? What was that? Important, but it's something more than just important. So when we say that this person or this individual is integral to that community, necessary, or that person, right, makes the community whole. Without that person, the community is empty. Without that person, the community is void, right? Their essence, their importance to a community or their importance to a project is so much so that it is incomplete. Without them, it cannot proceed without them, right? So think about our terms of government, right? Earlier today, I was having a lunch with my little brother. We're talking about this, and maybe that's why it's on my mind. But think about the three branches of government, right? Legislative, executive, and judicial. Without one of those branches following through with the way they were designed, well, we have an incomplete, right? And an incomplete government leads to an unstable type of ruling, right? Let's talk about it in terms of the church. A congregation without an eldership is what, according to Titus 1:5? What was that? It is scripturally unorganized, or as Titus 1:5 says, it is deficient. Right? It is deficient. Well, why is it deficient? It is incomplete. You see that? So the integrity is compromised, because an integral part of the structure of that congregation is missing. You see that? the integrity of a government, or our government as it was designed, is compromised if one of the branches is missing, right? So pay attention to the fact that the word integral, right, is the root word of integrity. To have integrity is to be whole. To have integrity is to be complete. In other words, as they would say in the old times, my word is my bond, right? If I say that I'm going to do something, my integrity is going to be seen in the fact that I'm going to follow through. When I say, or I can't commit, or when I make a commitment, I am going to follow through, and the fact that that is my status quo, that the fact that that is something that is integral to my personality, that my character is weak without my integrity, that I am incomplete if I do not follow through, right? Then that's what makes me a man or a woman of integrity. It has to do with commitment. It has to do with honesty. But because a person walks in integrity, that person knows how to navigate their commitments, don't they? They have the wisdom not to overcommit. They have the wisdom to know what their limits are, and they have the wisdom to know what they can and is at their hand, at their disposition to be able to do, and whatever is not within their reach, or whatever is not within their realm of possibility, they will not commit to it. Notice what James 3, as we just read, right, verse 4 talks about. It talks about navigating, right? Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot desires. So a wise tongue, a prudent tongue, a man who measures his words, a man who knows how to speak wisely because he understands his strengths, he understands the situation, and he knows not to speak more than what he should have, is a man who can navigate that large ship by a small rudder, right? And in the case of the human being, right, we're talking about the tongue. The tongue is not a large member, is it, of the body? Our tongue is not large in comparison to other parts of our body. And yet, this one has so much power that it can either build someone up or it can tear someone down. If I were to commit to someone that I'm going to be there, I give you my word, I'm going to be there for the most important day of your life, and then I forget to go and I don't show up. If that person trusted me, if that person put their confidence in me and they believed me, what will my absence do for them? What will it do for me? What does it say about me? Can I be relied upon? Can I be trusted? Go with me to Genesis. In the book of Genesis, we see an example of this about a man who forgot, right, one of God's servants, even after he had been kind to him while they were both in prison, right? Genesis chapter 41. And we're going to read there at verse 8. Now it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, talking about Pharaoh. And he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told him his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. Then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I remember my faults this day. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker, we each had a dream in one night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now there was a young Hebrew man with us there, a servant of the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came to pass, just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me to my office, and he hanged him. Now notice verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon, and he shaved, changed his clothing, and came to Pharaoh. What if the chief or butler would have decided, even though he remembered, no, I'm not about to talk about this Hebrew. I'm not about to give this man more power than me. If I say who this man is and what his ability is, I'm going to be a forgotten thought. Or he's going to remember that I neglected to remember him before Pharaoh, and he's going to take his vengeance on me. I'm just going to stay quiet, and no one ever has to know that I always knew someone that could have interpreted the dream. If he would have kept that information to himself, what would have happened to Egypt? They would have starved, wouldn't they? What would have happened to the chief butler himself? He would have starved. But pay attention to the fact that even though, yes, this man, verse 9, forgot to speak on behalf of Joseph, he acknowledged and remembered his faults. I now remember my faults. He took responsibility. He took ownership for what he had done wrong. But he did not keep this valuable piece of information to himself. He shared it with Pharaoh. Now, mind you, he didn't know what the dream meant, right? He had no clue what the meaning of the Pharaoh's dream was, but he knew that it was important enough for Pharaoh to have been stirred from his sleep and to be troubled by, what is this that I just saw in my dreams? And because of it, Joseph not only was able to give an interpretation to Pharaoh, he was also able to provide wise counsel and how to prepare for the 7 years of famine. The butler's remembrance, his humbleness in acknowledging where he was wrong, and in his diligence in making his wrong right, that integrity that he showed there led to the salvation of an entire kingdom, didn't it? Brethren, our integrity, how we use our words, what we commit to, what we devote to, it matters. It not only affects me, it also affects those around me. It's a ship. Even though the captain is the one who's at the rudder and he's the one that's controlling and navigating the ship, he's not the only one on that ship, is he? There are other sailors and there are other passengers whose lives he has within his hands, which he needs to navigate very safely if he does not want to be responsible for any of their deaths. He has to be careful in how he moves that rudder, because if he jerks it too hardly, he can throw one of his sailors overboard. Sometimes, brethren, when we speak out of turn, sometimes if we speak foolishly, go back with me to Proverbs chapter 10. Notice the counterpart. Pay attention to the counterpart there of verse 9. But he who perverts his ways will become known. I'm not trusting that man. That man's a liar. There's no integrity in him. He always leaves you hanging. He always doesn't follow through. He always falls through, right? Why would I go to this person and ask him for help if I know they're going to come up with some excuse and they cannot be relied upon? Next thing I know, I'm going to be out in the ocean, overboard, and he's not going to turn that ship back for me, right? So, again, notice the parallels that we can find there. Verse 10, he who winks with the eye causes trouble, but a prating fool will fall. Now, here's where we really left off, right? Someone who is loud, someone who is boisterous, right? Someone who always is craving attention. Well, this person, right, is always trying to be the center of attention, and they're always trying to cause trouble. But it's interesting because here in verse 10, we're seeing a comparison made between two, if you want to say it this way, two wicked people, right? And what caught my eye of this verse is that even when we're doing no good, even when we're trying to do something that is not right, there is a wise way in which we can do what's evil. Did you notice that? What is the contrast that is being shown between 10a and 10b? He who winks with the eye causes trouble, but a prating fool will fall. What do we see there? Well, what's the difference between winking an eye and a prating fool? So, how many of you sisters heard from your mothers or from your fathers, beware the quiet ones? Oh, I already heard one sister do that sound, right? Beware of the quiet ones. You have to watch out for the quiet ones. Well, why is that? Because they're quiet. You don't know what they're thinking. You don't know what they're planning. And sometimes you don't know what they're up to. Now, does that mean that they're wrong or evil? No. Some people are just quiet. They don't like to talk, right? But when my mom would say that, and, you know, she would look at me, my little brother remembers, she'd look at me and she'd say it about me. You know, she would always say, beware the quiet ones, and looking dead at me because apparently I was quiet. You know, she could never try to figure me out, because what she was referring to wasn't so much that I wouldn't talk, it was more of the fact that I had a good poker face, if you want to call it that way. I knew how to keep my emotions in check. I knew how to stay neutral, right? If I was up to something, you weren't about to find out. He who winks with the eye causes trouble. You know, even a criminal who's good at being a criminal knows how to keep things quiet, right? As Brother Zach says, he's talking about someone who's covert. Someone who can communicate with other people without making a sound. You know, you look at movies and you look at TV shows when the con artists are playing a card game. And the woman, right, is working with the guy who's winning. And they have these signals where she's very subtly would just kind of touch her neck, or she'll just, you know, grab his beard or whatever the case may be. And every one of those singles is sending a communication of what kind of hand he has and whether they're going to win or not. But they don't have to communicate with words. All they have to do is speak without speaking, don't they? A prating fool tells you what he's going to do. A prating fool is so boastful and so proud of what they're going to do, they'll shout it to the whole world. They're usually the ones that will give themselves away because they take pride in the wrong that they've done, right? That's right, I'm the one who shot this person. That's right, I was the one who stole or robbed that bank. You know, that was all me. I want all the credit. I want to be acknowledged and I want to be given my glory because I did such a great con or I ran such a great scheme. They give themselves away. Notice how Solomon very wisely here in Proverbs 10:10 shows us that even when it comes to doing wrong, there is value in learning to measure our words, right? There is value in keeping our words to a minimum. Go now to James chapter 3. In James chapter 3, verse 5, someone please read it for us. James chapter 3, verse 5. How big of a flame does it take for a forest to burn? Just a spark, right? One small spark is enough. If that one small spark is kindled, or the wind blows it in the right direction and it catches the right branch or the right dry leaf, as soon as that spark gives life or takes life, everything within its vicinity starts doing what? Everything starts burning. Did you pay attention to the fact that in James chapter 3, verse 5, the type of tongue that it is being referred to that can do this is the boastful tongue? Did you see that? A prating fool is someone who has a boastful tongue, right? Someone who likes to always shout to the four winds everything that they want, everything that they've done, because they want man's glory. You know, someone who's always announcing to the world their good alms. These were the Pharisees, right? They would stand in the corners, said the Lord. They'll stand in the corners and they'll lead these long prayers so that everyone can hear them. But God didn't hear them because it was a prating fool. The Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, he makes the comparison of a clanging brass, doesn't he? Or a sounding cymbal. They just make noise. But eventually, they fall. They fall by their own pride. They fall by their own words. You know, in Spanish, again, I'm translating it in English, There's a saying that says that the fish falls by its own mouth. You think about the fact that when you're fishing and you're using bait, if you're using a rod, right, a throwing rod, a reel, well, how does the fish get caught? They take the bait. Well, how did they take the bait? They bite it, right? That's the concept of the prating fool. Your boastfulness will eventually lead to your own demise. Your proud words will eventually lead to your fall. We talked about Samson. Samson was a prating fool, wasn't he? Even though he gave away the secret to his strength, when Delilah had chopped off all of his hair, he was so presumptuous and arrogant that when he rose, he said, I will do just like I did every other time, and I will defeat these Philistines as well. And then those bone-chilling, those goosebump-filled words. But he did not know that the Lord was not with him. Sometimes when we speak foolishly, when we prate as fools, we push away God. God does not want to be seen with us. God does not want to be in our company. Is that your friend? I don't know who that is. Never seen him in my life, right? We've all had people like that in our lives. People that are so loud, people that are so obnoxious, and that, you know, they're embarrassing when other people are just looking at us and like, I don't know. I've never seen the guy in my life, right? Well, that's the prating fool that Proverbs 10:10 speaks about, and that's the one whose tongue, as we see in James chapter 3, verse 5, can kindle an entire forest fire. Go back, right, to Proverbs chapter 10. We now go into verses 11 through 14, and here, right, in verses 11 through 14, we now talk about how the tongue affects those around us, right? Now remember, in this section of Proverbs, the idea that is heavily being taught by Solomon is that learning how to speak, learning how to use wise communication will teach us how to heal a community, right? But if we learn to speak foolishly, if we learn how to speak or prate as fools, well, then we will learn how to destroy an entire community. Verses 11 through 14 is going to elaborate on that. Solomon is going to expand and show us how the potential of us not measuring our words, of us not learning how to use our communication effectively, can eventually lead either to the healing of a community or the destruction of a community. Verse 11, the mouth of the righteous is a well of life, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. The mouth of the righteous. Again, notice, a man who walks in integrity, a man who is upright, a man who knows how to speak, is a man who is righteous. And his mouth, says Scripture, is a well of life. A person who will give you the right advice, a person who is a man or a woman of integrity, will give you the advice that you need, not the advice that you want. They'll know how to tell you what you need to hear. And yes, sometimes they have to be stern, don't they? Sometimes they have to show us tough love. You know, we know for a fact that for our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, it was not easy calling the Pharisees and the scribes hypocrites time and time and time again there in chapter 23 of Matthew. If memory serves me right, I believe Jesus called them hypocrites no less than 10 to 12 times, if I'm not mistaken. Not only did he call them hypocrites, in that same passage, he calls them brood of vipers. But do we consider what Jesus did before he got to that point? Have we considered why he called followed after calling them hypocrites? Oh, woe unto you, Pharisees and scribes, hypocrites, for you are blind guides of the blind, and both will fall into the ditch. He wasn't insulting them. He was pointing out how they were practicing hypocrisy. And his purpose was to heal them from that hypocrisy, to get rid of that cancer that is hypocrisy in them, to cut out that sin, that wickedness that was so deeply impregnated into their skin, right? Into their lives. Jesus was trying to perform soul-saving surgery, wasn't he? And when we look at that, notice that his mouth of righteousness was a well of life. He was trying to help them get out of their sins. But violence covers the mouth of the wicked. Do you remember when Ahab sent for the prophets because Jehoshaphat wanted to know if they should go to war? Do you recall what they counseled, what those false prophets counseled Micaiah? Let's go to the first book of Kings, right? The first book of Kings. Chapter 22. First book of Kings, chapter 22. And let's read from verse 11 to verse 14. Can someone read it for us, please? First Kings, chapter 22, verses 11 through 14. So what were they wanting Micaiah to do? Hey, let's have solidarity, right? Don't contradict us, Micaiah. Go ahead and tell him what he wants to hear, because if you go against us, you're going to kindle the wrath of the king. You're going to discourage him, right? You're going to discourage him. Notice the healing or destructive power of our words, as we are seeing there in Proverbs 10:11. There in James chapter 3, verses 6 through 8, we see the same concept, and again, we see the application or the elaboration of what the proverb is saying. In 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 13, then the messenger had gone to call Micaiah, spoke to him, saying, now listen the words of the prophets with one accord, encourage the king. Please let your word be like the word of one of them and speak encouragement. Lie to the man. Tell him what he wants to hear. He's going to do it anyways, Micaiah. Why would you put us in that predicament? Micaiah, right, a man of integrity, a man who spoke righteously, gave the king what he needed to hear, not what he wanted to hear. He told him, don't go. The Lord is not with you. But King Ahab, right, he took it, of course, in the wrong way. And then we see in verse 26, so the king of Israel said, take Micaiah and return him to Amon, the governor of the city, and Joash, the king's son, and say, thus says the king, put this fellow in prison and feed him with bread of affliction and water of affliction until I come in peace. Now, pay attention, Micaiah is the only one who's speaking truth. He's the righteous one among all. The king still doesn't accept his words. The king chooses to believe a lie. Verse 28, but Micaiah said, if you ever return in peace, the Lord has not spoken by me. And he said, take heed, all you people. You're going to find out, Ahab, who the false prophets are and who the prophet of the Lord is. You're choosing to believe a lie, and that lie that you're choosing to believe will lead to your death. In verses 29 through 40, the king dies in battle. The words of Micaiah are proven true. And the false prophets, including Zedekiah, the one who made the iron horns, they all led their king to his death. Now remember, Proverbs 10:11 says, right? That in the mouth of the wicked is covered by what? Violence, right? The mouth of the wicked, the unruly tongue, the unwise tongue, the foolish tongue. It's going to lead to violence. It's going to provoke calamity. It's going to cause us turmoil and strife. A person, right, who is an instigator. A person who has their own proper agenda, who's selfish, and therefore they're trying to get what they want, so they'll say whatever necessary. They'll manipulate, they'll betray, they'll lie and deceive. They don't care who they run over or what community or colony they destroy, as long as they get what they want. Their perverse lips are covered with violence. Have you ever stopped to think, what is the agenda of the false teacher? Why is the false teacher so willing to cause division among the church? Why is it that the false teacher doesn't care about causing harm to the body of Christ? Why are they willing to tear congregations apart and turn brother against brother, sister against sister for their false doctrine? What is it about false teachers? What is it about false prophets? Selfish, right? Power. Control. It's about being in control. It's about having power. Being viewed and in dominance. Look, think about the fact that Diotrephes did something like this, didn't he? John says there in the third letter of John that Diotrephes would not allow them to arrive. That he would not allow them to speak. And why was he doing this? Because he loves the first places. He loved being seen in honor. The Pharisees, the Sadducees. Why did they decide to kill Jesus? Why was he viewed as a threat by them? Their power. Their political power, their positions of power, their authority, their riches, their prestige, their honor among men. And even though Christ was trying to actually receive true glory from above, they loved more the glory of men than the glory of God, says John in John chapter 12. The lips of the righteous is a well of life. A righteous man will speak righteously. He's not going to tell you what you want to hear. He's going to tell you what you need to hear. But at the heart of that is that he wants you to live. What's motivating that man, that woman, to tell you what you need to hear? It may not be what you want to hear. You may not like it. It may not be comfortable. But that person who's willing to tell you those things to your face, that person loves you. That person wants what's best for you. Because they're willing to put themselves in harm's way to keep you from continuing in that sickness. We go to James chapter 3. Notice the parallel that we drew, right? James chapter 3, verses 6 through 8. Someone can please read it for us before they ring the second bell on us. James chapter 3, verses 6 through 8. Here is why we have to learn to tame our tongues with righteousness, isn't it? An untamed tongue is deadly. James expands upon why the righteous man heals. What's helping that man's tongue is his righteousness, it's his uprightness, it's his integrity. His purpose for speaking and his attitude towards speaking is one for healing, not for destroying. But a person who does not hold back their words, a person who lets their emotions get the best of them, look at how destructive they can be. Notice the power of the tongue found there in verse 8, right? Because this is where we're going to have to pick up next week. But again, we're now seeing the section of Proverbs 10, 6 through 14, of how our words, how our good communication can heal a community, or our bad communication can burn that community down. Thank you all for your attention. Let's have a quick word of prayer, and then we will be dismissed. If you will, please bow with me.